स्नात्वानुसवनं तस्मिन् कालिन्द्या सलिले शिवे कृत्वोचितानि निवासन् आत्मन कल्पितासनः स्नात्वा After taking bath, anusavanam, three times, tasmin, in that, kalindya, in the river Kalindi, the Yamuna, salile, in the water, shive, which is very auspicious, kritva, performing, Uchitani, suitable, Nivasan, sitting, Atmanah, of the self, Kalpita Asanah, having prepared a sitting place. Translation. Narad Muni instructed, My dear boy, in the waters of the Yamuna river, which is known as Kalindi, you should take three baths daily because the water is very auspicious, sacred and clear. After bathing, you should perform the necessary regulative principles for Ashtanga Yoga and then sit down on your asana, sitting place, in a calm and quiet position. Purport. It appears from this statement that Dhruva Maharaj had already been instructed how to practice the Eightfold Yoga system, which is known as Ashtanga Yoga. This system is explained in our Bhagavad Gita as it is, in the chapter entitled Sankhya Yoga, pages 319 to 322. It is understood that in Ashtanga Yoga, one practices settling the mind and then concentrating it on the form of Lord Vishnu, as will be described in the following verses. It is clearly stated here that Ashtanga Yoga is not a bodily gymnastic exercise, but a practice to concentrate the mind on the form of Vishnu. Before sitting on his asana, which is also described in Bhagavad Gita, one has to cleanse himself very nicely in clear or sacred water thrice daily. The water of the Yamuna is naturally very clear and pure, and thus if anyone bathes there three times, undoubtedly he will be very greatly purified externally. Narad Muni therefore instructed Dhruva Maharaj to go to the bank of the Yamuna and thus become externally purified. This is part of the gradual process of practicing mystic yoga. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatripatam Maham Vande Sri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakal Pataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త వృంద, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం, దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తథో జయముదీరయేత్. నష్టప్రాయేషు అభద్రేషు నిత్యం భాగవత సేవయా. భగవతీ ఉత్తమ శ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతీర్నైష్టికీ. హరే కృష్ణ. నారదముని ఇన్స్ట్రక్టెడ్, మై డియర్ బాయ్, ఇన్ ద వాటర్స్ ఆఫ్ ది యమునా రివర్ విచ్ ఇస్ నోన్ యాజ్ కాలిందీ, యూ షుడ్ టేక్ 3 బాత్స్ డైలీ because the water is very auspicious, sacred and clear. After bathing, you should perform the necessary regulative principles for Ashtanga Yoga and then sit down on your asana, sitting place, in a calm and quiet position. So, we are in the 8th chapter, text 43, Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. Dhruva Maharaj has been refused a seat in the lap of his father, Maharaj Uttanapad. His stepmother has rendered him unqualified to sit in his father's lap. That is the bad part. But in all this bad part, one good thing that she did was, she said that if you want to attain qualification to sit in your father's lap, go and worship Lord Narayan. So that is one good part in the bad. This mess, and when Dhruva Maharaj was very frustrated with this instruction, he went to his own mother, who also reinforced the same message, you go and worship Narayan. So in that sense, his stepmother as well as his own mother have directed Dhruva Maharaj on the right person to approach for any problem in life. So the person is decided. Both of them are unanimous that it is Lord Narayana or Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj leaves his home and settles himself down, wherein he meets in the forest, where he meets Narad Muni. Narad Muni begins by testing the intent of Dhruva Maharaj, by discouraging him from surrendering to the Lord through the process of Ashtanga Yoga, saying that this process is too difficult, it is not meant for children like you. And Narad Muni tries to give him marginalized instructions. However, Dhruva Maharaj is very resolute in his determination, not necessarily for bhakti, but to get a kingdom greater than that of his father. So his desires are absolutely material in nature. But seeing Dhruva Maharaj's resolute determination for whatever he wants to achieve, Narad Muni then gives him a set of instructions by which Dhruva Maharaj can indeed attain what he wanted, even though it's a material benediction. In the process of instructing Dhruva Maharaj, Narad Muni knows that the person who has to be approached if we want to attain something has already been instructed by his mother and stepmother. So Narad Muni now instructs him on the process and the place. So there are three things which are important here: person, process, place. So in this set of verses which we are discussing today, Narad Muni is discussing the process of attaining the Supreme Lord as well as the place. So if you see here, Narad Muni's instructions have got two aspects: the process of Ashtanga Yoga in attaining the Supreme Lord, in pleasing the Supreme Lord, the place, which is Kalindi Yamuna, that Narad Muni is prescribing where Dhruva Maharaj should be doing that process of Ashtanga Yoga. So let's begin with Narad Muni's instruction around taking bath. Narad Muni is saying in this verse, you should take a bath and then you should perform the necessary regulative principles for Ashtanga Yoga and then sit down in an asana in a calm and quiet position. So let's discuss that aspect of Ashtanga Yoga first before we go into the other aspect of Yamuna Devi. So Ashtanga Yoga as all of you know, is also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Dhyan Yoga section. And it is one of the bona fide processes of attaining the feet of the Supreme Personality of the Lord. Ashtanga Yoga is not prescribed for the process of Kali Yuga, because the first step in Ashtanga Yoga requires one to leave one's residence, which itself is very difficult. So the first instruction itself is very difficult to follow. Then we have, one has to go to a forest. There are no forests, rarely any forests which are safe. And with the kind of deforestation that is happening in today's world, in few years we don't even know whether forests will exist. So Ashtanga Yoga is already very difficult to do, and it is becoming more and more impossible as a process to follow in Kali Yuga. More so ever, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has clearly mentioned, and also the other acharyas like Ramananda Acharya or Madhva Acharya have already mentioned, that the process for Kali Yuga is Harinam Sankirtan, chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, no other way, no other way. So there is no need for us to practice Ashtanga Yoga. But going back to Dhruva Maharaja's time, at that time and age, Ashtanga Yoga was still feasible. So Narad Muni is instructing him to perform that process. Narad Muni is instructing Dhruva Maharaj on the 8 limbs of Ashtanga Yoga. Just like there is Navavidha Bhakti, Ashtanga Yoga has got 8 limbs. The first limb of Ashtanga Yoga is Yama. Yama means restraint, practicing restraint. The second is Niyam, Yam and Niyam. Niyam means certain observances certain practices which you have to observe if your Ashtanga yoga process has to be successful and if it has to give you your intended result. So yam and niyam, the first two aspects of Ashtanga yoga. The third is asana. Asana means posture in which you do something. The fourth is pranayama. Pranayama means breath control. So we talked about yam, niyam, asana and pranayama. The fifth is pratyahar. Pratyahar means controlling the senses. The sixth is dharan. Dharan means concentration. The seventh is dhyan. Dhyan means meditation. And the eighth is samadhi. Samadhi means absolute consciousness. So yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahar, dharan, dhyan, samadhi. These are the eight limbs of Ashtanga yoga. In the last verse, as well as in today's verse and then the next verse, essentially Narad Muni is focusing on the first three limbs, which is yam, restraint, niyam, observances, and asana, which is posture. So if you see this verse also, he's talking about after bathing, which is one of this niyam, then he's talking about sit down in an asana, which is a calm and quiet position. So Narad Muni is instructing, specifically focusing on these limbs. So let's talk about these three limbs in a little bit of detail. So yam refers, as we mentioned earlier, to restraint. To practice restraint or to curb certain tendencies. To withhold certain behavioral patterns which would automatically come to us as a result of our conditioning in this material world. So yam is to practice restraint. To think before you act. So yam essentially refers to development of certain attitudes. Development of certain attitudes which influence our behavioral patterns in this world. Attitudes which lead to behavioral patterns and which therefore impact our relationships in this world. With the people of this material world, with the Vaishnavas and as a result, our relationship with the Supreme Lord Himself. So, Patanjali, who is originally the guru of Ashtanga Yoga, he mentions five types of yam. I'm reiterating that we are discussing the eight limbs of Ashtanga Yoga. The first aspect is yam or restraint. Patanjali is talking about five aspects of that yam, the first principle of restraint. Restraint from what? The first one, aspect of yam, is restraint from aggression, which is called as ahimsa. So the first aspect of yam is ahimsa, non-aggression or non-violence. And this ahimsa or non-violence is in action, in speech, as well as in thought. Ahimsa is not only in action, ahimsa is also in our speech. Now, if you take this, even this single aspect, is it not something which is for in the process of bhakti also it is relevant? In bhakti also, we have to practice ahimsa, not only in our action, but in our speech and thought. Is it not easy for all of us? Have we not practiced the art of ahimsa to perfection when it comes to our actions within the precincts of the temple? Yes. So even something goes wrong and we get angry, we somehow practice restraint in terms of how we respond, at least within the temple. Right? Or in front of all the Vaishnavas. So we may practice restraint on action, but we may let loose our tongue and become violent in terms of speech. Or even if we manage to restrain our speech, we will never restrain our... It's very rare that we are able to restrain our violence in our thinking. So we have this incident that happened with a Vaishnava. We may not have reacted as regards the external world. Our response might have been perfect. But inside our mind, that wound is still there. And it is festering. It is developing into poison over the years. So, ahimsa is... And Narad Muni, when he is instructing Dhruva Maharaj on these Ashtanga Yoga principles, the importance of ahimsa, non-aggression, even in action, speech and thought, is being discussed. The second aspect of ahimsa, of yam, is satyam. Satyam means truthfulness. Again, truthfulness is in action, speech and thought. Which means, if we have to succeed in any form of yoga, be it Ashtanga Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, it is very important to be the same person inside as what we show outside. That is actually called as, that is the true import of Satyam. Satyam does not necessarily mean speaking the truth. It means having an integrity in our life that whatever we are inside, outside, we show outside, is the same that we are inside. That, in other words, is also called as simplicity. And simplicity is one of the qualities that attracts the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, we may have anarthas, there is no doubt about it. But despite our anarthas, we can still be simple. So that is the second aspect of yam. The third aspect is asteya, which means not having tendencies for stealing. But as simple as it may sound, it actually means minimalistic living, living a simple life. If we want to live a minimalistic life, why would we steal? So it is not only about stealing, it's about minimalistic life. And it underscores the basic cause of stealing. What is the basic cause of stealing? Desire. Desire is the basic cause of stealing. So asteya addresses that desire. The fourth aspect is brahmacharya. Brahmacharya means continence. Focusing less on the physical and more on the spiritual. That is the essence of brahmacharya. Brahmacharya doesn't simply mean abstaining from sex, which is the usual thing that comes in our mind. But the underlying principle is focus less on the physical and more on the spiritual. Then the next aspect of yam, the fifth aspect, is aparigraha. Aparigraha pertains to the nature of not coveting, non-covetousness, or in other words, not being greedy. So the underlying message is not just, you know, yes, obviously, not being greedy is very obvious, but what is not obvious here is, if there is attitude of gratitude, where there is gratitude, that gratitude turns what we have to enough. The attitude of gratitude turns what we have to enough. Does it make sense? So that is the underlying principle in aparigraha. So we started with the eight limbs of Ashtanga Yoga. We now talked about the first aspect, which is yama, and yama has in turn five aspects. We talked about ahimsa, satyam, asteya, brahmacharya and aparigraha. Now that brings us to the second aspect of Ashtanga Yoga, which Narad Muni is talking about, is niyam. As we mentioned earlier, yam pertains to restraint and niyam pertains to observances. Observances essentially mean cultivation of good habits in life. Through these observances, the goal is to cultivate good habits. Because when we cultivate good habits, with time, those good habits become our nature. And Narad Muni is underscoring the importance of cultivating a nature. What nature is that? Our true nature. To come out of the conditioned nature and then re-establish ourselves in our true nature. by cultivation of good habits, which is called as niyam or observances. In Ashtanga Yoga, it is made very clear that these niyamas are not simple exercises or actions. Rather, they represent an inner state of mind, an inner state of consciousness. They refer to an attitude we adopt towards ourselves, unto ourselves. With examples, it will be clear. The best examples is, what are the different aspects of niyam? So just as in yam, in niyam also, there are five codes of conduct. What are those? The first aspect of niyam is shaucha. Shaucha or shaucham. Shaucham talks about purity or cleanliness. Cleanliness, external cleanliness as well as internal cleanliness. And Narad Muni is talking about cleanliness in this verse as well. It is again, sit down in your asana in a calm and quiet position. Before that he says, take three baths because the water is very auspicious, sacred and clear. So he is talking about cleanliness aspect. So that is first one, shaucham. The second is santosha. Santosh means contentment, being happy and content with what one has. The third is austerity or tapasya. That is the third aspect of niyam. The fourth aspect of niyam is svadhyaya or self-study. And the fifth aspect of niyam is pranidhan. Pranidhan means devotion or surrender to God. Now when one talks about Ashtanga Yoga, one wouldn't expect there would be something called as pranidhan or surrender to the Lord. So when I was studying this section, I was thinking, oh, this is good. But it is not surprising because Srila Prabhupada has mentioned in several sections in Srimad Bhagavatam that for the success of any yogic system, the common platform should be bhakti. We talked about Jnana Yoga, we talk about Dhyana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Kriya Yoga, any type of yoga, the underlying principle is always bhakti. It is bhakti which gives the results of any form of yoga. Except that in the bhakti yoga process, it is kevala bhakti. Bhakti yoga process is independent of any other things. Whereas Ashtanga Yoga is dependent on bhakti. So any form of yoga is dependent on bhakti. So niyam we discussed has got these five aspects. Shaucha, santosh, tapas, svadhyaya and pranidhan. Narad Muni is focusing specifically on shaucha aspect in this verse. As we mentioned earlier, shaucha means total cleanliness. Cleanliness of mind as well as cleanliness of body. Why is cleanliness required? What is the underlying principle behind shaucham? Even external cleanliness, what is the underlying principle behind external and internal cleanliness? The underlying principle is the Isavashya principle in Isopanishad. Isavashyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bhunjita magrida kasya swadhyanam. Everything animate or inanimate is owned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which includes our body as well. The moment we think our body belongs to us, then the thought comes that I may or may not take care of this body because it belongs to me. But when we remember the Isavashya principle, which is the underlying principle behind cleanliness, we will understand that this body is a temple where Paramatma is residing. This body is a dwelling place. Not only is this body a temple or a dwelling place, but this body is the means of our salvation. This body is the means by which we can get out of this body. So if we understand these two principles, that it is a dwelling place and it is our equipment, it is an equipment given by the Lord for our salvation, then there would be an underlying reason to take care of this body. and therefore focus on the importance of cleanliness of this body externally as well as internally. So that is the underlying reason, principle. So external cleanliness, which is also called as bahya, has a psychological effect. External cleanliness has a psychological effect, and this external cleanliness includes being hygienic. External, when we again say external cleanliness, we only talk about taking bath. Okay. But external cleanliness, in addition to taking bath, also means maintaining a clean environment around us, which is conducive for a spiritual practice. So external cleanliness involves hygiene, it involves maintaining a clean environment and also a healthy diet. So three aspects of shaucham. So that is about the physical part. Similarly, cleanliness also involves a mental diet for internal cleanliness. Internal cleanliness is called as abhyantara. Internal cleanliness helps to cleanse and strengthen the mind. How does one develop internal cleanliness? As we said, external cleanliness is by taking bath, maintaining hygiene, clean environment and a healthy diet. But about internal cleanliness, even in Ashtanga Yoga, it is prescribed that internal cleanliness is dependent on your actions for internally clean, which is nothing but sadhu sangha. Other, connect with other people who are spiritually minded. Study the scriptures, read the shastras, have conversations, which is what pariprashnena sevaya or dadati prati grhanati guhyam akhyati prichati. So there is lot. So everything is similar in bhakti yoga. Everything that is there in ashtanga yoga is also there in bhakti yoga. So this is the mental food. Why? Because unless we are pure from within, unless there is the required amount of purity within the heart, inside, then it is, if it is not there, it is impossible to unite with the divine. So self-purification comes by uniting with the divine, and self-purification is also a qualification for uniting with the divine. But it also comes by uniting with the divine. So therefore, the whole idea of yam, niyam, saucham and all these aspects is to gradually develop an inner transformation so that we are more clearly able to see God from within our hearts, which is the goal of Ashtanga Yoga. The goal of Ashtanga Yoga is to see the Lord within the heart. So how can you see when there is a lot of dust that is clouding the soul from seeing the Lord? So that is about yam. So we talked about yam. Sorry, that is about niyam. We talked about yam. We talked about niyam. Now the third aspect, which is asana or posture. So Narad Muni is in this translation, he is instructing Dhruva Maharaj, sit in your asana in a calm and quiet position, not being fidgety. Calm and quiet position. So, the importance of asana, the third aspect of Ashtanga Yoga, is to be steady, to be comfortable. Please understand, to be steady, not fidgeting, to be comfortable. Because if we are not comfortable, we will be not steady. So, to be steady, to be comfortable, and more importantly, to be alert. Otherwise, one can be steady, one can be comfortable, and one can go to sleep. So that's why third aspect is given. Steady, comfortable and alert. These three aspects. Now, if you actually align it to, I'm sure all of you are thinking of japa when we are discussing this. So asana, posture. That's why Prabhupada always used to say, sit straight. Sit straight. What is it?
Sit properly.
Sit properly. Prabhupada used to say, sit properly. Now, why? What is sit properly? Which means be steady, be comfortable and more importantly be alert. So this aspect of asana is also there in bhakti yoga. Because a proper asana is conducive to meditation. A proper asana is conducive to focusing on the divine. Coming to the specific aspect of Ashtanga Yoga, since we are discussing that, in Ashtanga Yoga, entry into an asana and exit from the asana is as important as the asana itself. Entry into the asana and exit into the asana is as important as the asana itself. And the analogy, the underlying principle behind this is that when you are approaching any situation in your life, how you approach, when you are addressing any situation, difficult situation in your life, how you approach that situation and how you exit that situation is as important as how you attack that situation or how you address that situation. Okay, so there is an interesting analogy which is being given in Ashtanga Yoga. That just as approaching and exiting life's situation with awareness is important, tackling the situation is also important. But approach is important, exit is also important, not only tackling. So, we talked about the 8 limbs of Ashtanga Yoga. We talked about the 3 limbs, Yam, Niyam and Asana. We talked about the 5 aspects of Yam and we also talked about the 5 aspects of Niyam. And now we have discussed Asana. So, that is about Ashtanga Yoga, which is Narad Muni is instructing. Now, Narad Muni is also not only instructing him to perform Ashtanga Yoga, but what is Narad Muni specifically saying? He is not only talking about the process, but he is talking about the place. The place where one has to perform Ashtanga Yoga. What is the place that Narad Muni is instructing? Yamuna. He says, follow all this Yam, Niyam, etc., etc. But on the banks of the river Yamuna or Kalindi. So, the person is important, which is what the mothers have directed him to Lord Narayana. The process is important, which is Ashtanga Yoga. And now the place is being defined, which is Kalindi. Now, why is place such an important aspect in devotional service? So, place is usually referred to as Dham. Dham means a place where one can immediately contact the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, one of the 5 limbs of devotional service is what? Mathura Vas. That is the importance of a place. Now, why is place so important? Because these places like Vrindavan, Mathura, Jagannath, Puri, etc. These are places not meant for Artha or Kama. During our lunchtime, we were discussing the other day, you know, we usually discuss Krishna Katha during our lunchtime at office. We go to the 4th floor of our building. On the left hand side, you see a beautiful lake, but on all other sides, you see skyscrapers. So we were discussing the other day, myself and Rasik Chandra Prabhu, that the place called as Docklands is not created for the purpose of bhakti. So therefore, when you see outside, what do you see everywhere? You see NAB, you see, you know, Alliance, you see KPMG, you see ANZ Bank. So the place is not created for the purpose of bhakti. It is specifically created for Artha. Right? Some places, for example, Fitzroy Street in St. Kilda, what is it created for essentially? Or Grey Street, it is created for Kama. Whereas, the basic purpose of the existence of a holy dham is neither for Artha nor for Kama. It is there only because of the fact that one should perform bhakti in that place. The place itself exists for bhakti. So that is one reason why place becomes very important. A place for practicing bhakti is important. Second is, in such places there are spiritual vibrations. There are spiritual vibrations because the Lord has performed his pastimes in such a place. When we go to such a place, then we get an impetus to perform bhakti. That impetus is called as Uddipan. Uddipan means anything that you see which reminds you immediately of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when we go to such places, it is full of such Uddipanas. Not only has the Lord performed these pastimes, But there is an influx of devotees in such places. So wherever you see, you will see devotees. And more importantly, in such places, pure devotees are doing their sadhana. So that adds to the spiritual vibration of that place. Place is very important in bhakti because a place also aids our rasa with the Lord. If we have to develop rasa with the Lord, especially rasika bhaktas, the place becomes very important. That is why Rupa Goswami said in Nectar of Devotion that he is saying that better than the material world is Vaikuntha, better than Vaikuntha is Vrindavan, better than Vrindavan is Govardhan, better than Govardhan is Radha Kund. So he is talking about the importance of that place. Why is he saying Radha Kund is the highest? Because it is pure Madhurya Ras in Radha Kund. So therefore the place aids our helps us focus on re-establishing our rasa with the Lord. And all the more important, the place, like holy places, all the time, conversations of Krishna are going on. Shravanadi Chitta Shuddhe Karila Udaya. So wherever you go, you will find that very great personalities, spiritual personalities are always giving lectures. They are talking about the Lord. So you have ample choice where to go and sit, and wherever you go in Vrindavan, for example, you will hear pandals where Bhagavat Pravachan is going on. So that is the importance of place. Now Narad Muni is specifically in this context talking about Yamuna Nadi or Kalindi. Now why is Narad Muni specifically talking about Yamuna or Kalindi as the place for Dhruva Maharaj? Dhruva Maharaj has come in with a material desire in his heart. And how will material desire go away? Only when he gets a higher taste of spiritual desire. And what better place than Yamuna or Kalindi? Why is Yamuna Nadi so important? Because Yamuna Nadi has descended to this material world because of the wish of Srimati Radharani. Yamuna Nadi is considered often as an expansion of Radharani or specifically as an expansion of Vishakha Devi. Yamuna Nadi, in fact, when Lord Krishna wanted to come in into this material world, when he mentioned this to Radharani, she fainted. Mm-hmm. Why did she faint? When Krishna asked her, why did you faint? She said that if I have to come down into this material world, I cannot live without Yamuna, Govardhan and Vrindavan. How can I come down? I can't leave these three places and come down. So Lord Krishna said, I have already understood your heart and I have already made arrangement that all three of them will manifest in this material world. And then Radharani agreed to come. So this is the mahima of Yamuna Nadi, that she is one of the three of the most dearest things, without which she wouldn't even want to come into this material world. So by the wish of Srimati Radharani, Yamuna Nadi flows, begins its course in a place called Yamunotri in the Himalayas, flows down and specifically comes to Vrindavan. She also meets Ganga Nadi at Prayag. So just as Ganga Nadi is very important, has got a very prime importance in bhakti, Yamuna Nadi is also equally or more important. In fact, in Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, Yamuna Nadi attains slightly more importance than Ganga Devi. In the Yamunashtakam, Rupa Goswami mentions that one who worships Yamuna Nadi, one who worships Yamuna Nadi with full devotion, her brother, who is her brother? Yamaraj, does not disturb such a person at all. Yamaraj cannot approach someone who is attached to Yamuna Nadi. So Yamuna Nadi is, she has a very integral, she plays a very integral role in all of Lord Krishna's pastimes. And we always see Yamuna Nadi enhancing the mood and the richness of Lord Krishna's sweet pastimes in different rasas. Vatsalya ras. How does Yamuna Nadi address Vatsalya ras? How does she serve Vatsalya ras? Because the cows which are grazing are always grazing on the banks of the river Yamuna. And the cows and cows, they not only are grazing there, but they also drink her water every other day. So she's serving that. The pastimes in Sakhyaras, which the Gopas are having with Lord Krishna, are also on the banks of the Yamuna Nadi, where they have a lot of sportive games which are happening next to her. So she is aiding those pastimes. Madhurya pastimes, on the moonlit night, where does Lord Krishna play his flute? On the banks of the Yamuna Nadi. So, in that sense, Yamuna Nadi is considered as the eternal Charanamrit of Lord Krishna, the gopis and the gopas. Not to speak of Vatsalya Sakhya and Madhurya, Yamuna Nadi also addresses or serves the Aishwarya pastimes of the Lord. For example, when Akrura parked his chariot, when he was taking Lord Krishna and Balaram away from Vrindavan to Mathura, he parked his chariot where? On the banks of the Kalindi. So, and when Akrura went inside those waters, he had darshan of Anantashesh, of Shankarshan. So even the Aishwarya pastimes of the Lord are manifest. She aids. Yamuna Nadi is aiding them. There are many ghats which are there leading to her water body. So along the banks of the Yamuna, there are so many ghats where Krishna and Balaram have performed so many of their pastimes of even killing demons. Cheer ghat, Kaliya ghat, Keshi ghat, Ram ghat, like that. So many ghats are there. In fact, I think this pastime happened in Ram ghat, right? Where Krishna was not there in Vrindavan. Balaram ji had specifically gone to meet the gopis, and then Balaram ji did his own Rasalila with his gopis. And then when he wanted to do it on the banks of the Yamuna, Yamuna Nadi wouldn't come because Balaram ji was intoxicated with Varuni. And when Balaram ji saw that Yamuna Nadi is not coming, then he took the plow and then pulled the Yamuna Nadi. So she is assisting in every pastime, not only Lord Krishna, but she also assisted Balaram ji here. So she is considered as the liquefied form of Prem. So bathing in Yamuna Nadi is one of the most important aspects of worshipping the holy land of Vrindavan. And therefore, Narad Muni is not only instructing Dhruva Maharaj on the process of Ashtanga Yoga, but he is saying, perform it on the banks of the Yamuna. So what a wonderful instruction by Narad Muni. Finally, to conclude, we will come to why devotional service is independent of the place. We talked about the process and we talked about how important place or dham is in devotional service. But it is also important to understand that devotional service or bhakti is independent of the dham. It is not dependent on any place. We will talk about that. And that is the understanding also that Srila Prabhupada is establishing in the purport of yesterday's verse. Prabhupada says, Narad Muni is instructing Dhruva Maharaj to do Ashtanga Yoga on the banks of the Yamuna, but for a person like Narad Muni, the place doesn't matter. Wherever he goes, that is the holy dham. So, for a pure devotee, holy dham does not matter. Let us understand few aspects of this in conclusion of this class. First is, Mathura Vas, yes, we said that it is a very important anga of bhakti, one of the five limbs, but there are four other limbs also, which is what? Sadhu Sang, association of devotees, Bhagavat Shravan, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting Harinam, and Shri Murti Sevaya or deity worship. There are four other angas also outside of Mathuravas. In fact, the Yuga Dharma is not Mathuravas. The Yuga Dharma is chanting the holy names of the Lord. Also, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a famous verse which says, Mantratas Tantratas Chitram Desha Kala Arha Vastutaha Sarvam Karoti Nischidram Anukirtanam Tava. Which means, even if something is wrong with the place, paraphernalia, time, etc., etc., everything becomes perfect where the holy name is chanted nicely. So what does it tell us? It tells us that chanting the holy names with a pure consciousness is more important than the place itself. So therefore, yes, the place is important, but more important is chanting. So that is one aspect. Then there are other pramanas also. For example, why the place is less important and bhakti is more important. In Padma Puran, Lord Shiva says, Naham tishthami vaikunthe yogi nam hridayeshuva yatra gayanti mad bhakta tatra tishthami narada. This is in Padma Puran. Lord Shiva is saying that Lord Krishna says that, or Vishnu says that, he does not reside in the holy dhams, he does not reside in the yogis, but he resides eternally in the hearts of his devotees who are engaged in chanting his holy names and in his pure devotional service. To corroborate that, there is another verse in Srimad Bhagavatam in the context of Vidura where it says, Bhavad Vida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swantasthena Gadabrata. People like you are verily holy places of pilgrimage personified, because wherever you go, you carry the Lord in your heart. So wherever personality like Srila Prabhupada went, even a place like New York became a holy dham. Place like Belgium becomes a holy dham. Where we are sitting is a holy dham. And that's why Prabhupada said specifically about Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir that this is Vaikuntha, Prabhupada said. So we are in Vaikuntha. So, now Prabhupada's mission, if we have to understand, there is a very beautiful aspect that comes through. That devotees don't aspire to reside in the holy dham. Yes, devotees accept and acknowledge and respect the holy dham. But what is the mission of a devotee? What was Srila Prabhupada's mission? Was it to reside in the holy dham? He could have, if he wanted to. At the age of 70, he could have done his nirjan bhajan in Radhakund and gone back to Godhead. He was already, Krishna Preshthaya. He had descended. So there is no question of Prabhupada going back to Godhead. He never left Godhead. Right? But please understand this. The devotee's mission, more important than living in the holy dham, the devotee's mission is to create holy dhams. And Srila Prabhupada, his whole life was in creating holy dhams within this world. Wherever he went, he created a holy dham in that place. 108 temples all over the world. So this is the mood of a devotee. So we are not undermining the importance of a holy dham, but we have to understand there are other aspects of bhakti which are more important than simply residing in the holy dham or going to the holy dham. Many times people have this, even sometimes practicing devotees say that in the holy dham and I will go, holy dham is replete with secluded places, we can go and do a nirjan bhajan in a secluded place. But again, Srimad Bhagavatam reiterates that going to a secluded place doesn't necessarily guarantee bhakti. Saubhari Muni went to a secluded place under the waters to perform his meditation. He saw two fishes mating there and he developed desire. He developed lust. Right? That was a secluded place. Bharat Maharaj, he was on the platform of Bhava. From the platform of Bhava, he fell down because of his attraction to a deer. Why did that happen? Because he went to a secluded place. He was not in the association of devotees. So, one should not even go to the holy dham thinking that the secluded places in the holy dham is going to help me. Nor one should go to a holy dham thinking that the holy dham has got a lot of water bodies where I will take bath. Because it is also said that simply going to the holy dham to take a dip in the water bodies is like go khara. Srimad Bhagavatam says, 84th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam in 10th canto says, it's like go khara. In the pastime where, Krishna is visiting Kurukshetra and all the gopis are there, the sages are saying, it's like the pilgrimage of cows and asses. Simply going to the holy dham to take a dip. So, shravanadi chitta shuddhe karilaudai. So we take bath through our ears. When we go to the holy dham, yes, we take bath in the holy rivers, no doubt. But the more important bath in the holy dham is the bath which we take of lectures. So we take bath in Srimad Bhagavatam. if we go to the holy dham prematurely, then the desire to enjoy our senses, if it has not left us, we will go to the holy dham and still continue the nonsense that we are continuing outside the holy dham. Because when we go to our holy dham, our mind also accompanies us to the holy dham. That is the biggest problem. So unless that mind has become our friend, it will come there and also try to ruin our life in the holy dham. So therefore, Krishna consciousness is more important than Mathura was. The consciousness is more important than the place. Again, there are few points that to underscore the consciousness is more important. The consciousness of serving the Lord is more important than going to a holy place. That is why it is said, Svarga apavarga narakeshu apitulya tadarshan. Devotees do not care about place, whether it is Svarga, heaven, apavarga or beyond that, or narakeshu, hellish planets. It doesn't matter. So, place does not matter for bhakti. In fact, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, he was already in the holy dham. But where did he go and sit? He used to sit in a public lavatory for doing his bhajan, because he did not want to be disturbed. Because even in a holy dham, one can be disturbed by people, materialists coming and seeking ashirwad. And what kind of ashirwad they want? Dhanam dehi, putram dehi. Want money or fame or name or health or something. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, even there, he used to sit inside a lavatory. So just going to holy dham is not going to help. So service in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is more important than residing in holy dham. So while yes, Narad Muni is underlying the importance of holy dham in this verse, Srila Prabhupada has also cautioned us, saying that going to holy dham is not more important than the attitude of being in service of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And that is the reason Srila Prabhupada left the holy dham to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. Tamal Krishna Maharaj left the holy dham and was traveling wherever Prabhupada wanted him to travel. Burijan Prabhu, we have got examples today. Our own acharyas have done that. Burijan Prabhu served in so many countries, in China specifically. Who will go to China? Devotees, when they were traveling with Prabhupada in the train, Prabhupada went to Delhi temple, right? Prabhupada said, get down here, go and start a temple here. So, it was a spontaneous decision, right? So, not even being with Prabhupada was as much important as serving the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Gaur Govind Swami, another example, setting up the Bhubaneswar temple, which was otherwise a forest. Nobody will go there, right? Gaur Govind Maharaj set up the temple there. Then we see salted bread. If you have read the book Salted Bread, I suggest if you have not read, please read this book, Salted Bread. Devotees who have been persecuted in Russia by the KGB or the authorities, Russian authorities, in jails they were put and they were given stale bread to eat. They converted that jail into a holy dham because they made beads out of those stale breads and chanted on those beads. The toothpaste which was given to them, they used that toothpaste and applied tilak all over their body. The people who were persecuting them used to put glass pieces from underneath, from below, from the lower part of their body. So such was the kind of torture, but they did not give up the process of bhakti, even though they were persecuted in such hellish conditions. Rather, they converted that place into a holy dham. So the point is, we have to develop fixation in bhakti, and that is more important than residing in a holy dham. Nevertheless, the importance of holy dham can never be underestimated. Yes, when we do a practice, do it in the holy dham. But what does that holy dham mean for all of us? That holy dham means practice your bhakti where you are surrounded by devotees. Because a place which is surrounded by devotees, that place may not be physically in Mathura Mandala, but that place becomes Mathura Mandala in itself. In conclusion, do not retire prematurely. Reside in the holy dham, yes, no doubt about it, if you want to reside physically in the holy dham, but only after we have finished amply serving the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when our body may not cooperate. And at such a point in time, many of us will face in our life, then the only thing we can do is Nirjan Bhajan. At that time, yes, we can go to the holy dhams, and one can leave one's body in the holy dham. Srila Prabhupada's one more glory is that Srila Prabhupada went out of the holy dham at 70. Srila Prabhupada came into the holy dham when he was almost about to leave his body, but even in his so-called death bed, if you can call that so, Srila Prabhupada was dictating over the dictaphone. He was not chanting. I mean, in one sense, Srila Prabhupada was chanting all the time, but he was dictating, which means, what is the key message that Srila Prabhupada is giving? Even if you are in the holy dham, give up your body in serving. Give up your body serving the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Give up your body in the Kurukshetra of preaching. So that is our mood. So any verses which glorify the holy dham, we have to understand it in the right context. We have to dovetail that understanding in alignment with Srila Prabhupada's mood for ISKCON and for ISKCON's devotees. So I'll stop here. Ask any questions or corrections.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for your words in class.
Thank you.
Well, I have this issue with the holy dham because I just came from Vrindavan and I got a very strong cultural shock from being that vibration again to a normal kind of materialistic society. And my heart, I just want to go back to Vrindavan. But I was thinking about Srila Prabhupada. I mean, he went to the West, but in the other hand, he stays 11 years in Vrindavan trying to prepare. So what I was thinking of, and I hear lectures from Ahindra Prabhu and some other devotees, that if we are not, they say, pure in heart, or pure devotees to some extent, it is very difficult to keep Krishna consciousness in the West. So I see myself like this, that I'm not good enough, so in one sense I'm kind of wasting my time trying to keep Krishna consciousness because I'm not pure enough. So I don't know if I would like to go back to Vrindavan to get more prepared, so then I can go out, but I don't know what you think about it.
Yeah. So, your thought process is coming from a premise that to preach, we have to be pure devotees. Your thought process is coming from that underlying premise.
Yes.
Now, we have to understand that a bit clearly. No doubt about it that our preaching will be effective to the extent of our purity. There is no doubt about that. Right? But we have to also understand that in ISKCON, when Prabhupada asked us to preach, that preaching was not a privilege because we are pure. That preaching itself is our sadhana. If we take preaching itself as our sadhana, our spiritual practice, then we will really understand that by the process of preaching, we will become pure. It is a recursive loop in one sense. You know, if you do a programming, it's called as a recursive loop. The program comes to one point, exits, and then goes back again to that loop. And again it is going back into the loop. It's like that. It's cyclic in one nature. We purify ourselves, we preach. By preaching, we get purified, and we again preach. So it's that way. Now, to preach, we need purity. Therefore, yes, as you rightly did, you went to the holy dham, we practiced sadhana, and which also, Prabhupada also mentions that, and we in various lectures we have heard that. Go to the holy dham, recharge your batteries, but then get out of the holy dham and go out and preach, right? Now, when we go to the holy dham, we develop purity, we go out and preach. But when we go out and preach, we may think how preaching can lead to me being pure. Is preaching a cause of purity or preaching is a result of purity? That thought will always come in our mind. So we have to understand that is the beauty of Bhakti Yoga. That is where Bhakti Yoga is different from Ashtanga Yoga. In all other yogic processes, there is a qualification that is needed to do certain activity. Whereas in bhakti, the beauty of bhakti is bhakti doesn't need any qualification. That is one. Number two, the beauty of bhakti is a process which is largely dependent on mercy of the Lord. So when the Lord sees that we are struggling to be pure, but regardless of whether we are pure or not, we are sincerely struggling and endeavoring to propagate the mission of Lord Chaitanya, even though we are not pure, we are awarded with purity by the Lord, by the sincerity of our service. Does it make sense? And that is how preaching is also a sadhana. Why do we do sadhana? To become pure. So preaching is not a certificate. It is not that if I am preaching, then I am thinking that I am a pure devotee. Now I have got a certificate to preach. Now I have come to the platform of preaching. No, it's not that. I am so fallen that I am struggling to do my sadhana. But somehow by preaching, I am trying to please serve the mission of my spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. By that, I may get blessings that I may become pure. If we understand preaching in this way, we will be very careful that we never get puffed up regardless of how much we preach, because we will also always understand that our preaching is our sadhana. As every class that we give, every person that we struggle to bring to Krishna consciousness, we do it as a service to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And ye yathamam prapadyante tam sthathaiva bhajamyaham. When the Lord sees that sincerity of our mood, that this person is preaching only to assist me. He is not preaching for name, fame, for puja and pratishtha. But this person is genuinely trying to just bring one soul into Krishna consciousness. So in that mood, if we see, then the answers will be very clear. So yes, go to the holy dham, get purified, come back and preach. And then again get purified through the process of preaching. Again go back to the holy dham. So it's a cyclic process. Is that... Yes, please.
Hare Krishna, sir. Thank you for your talks. I found it incredibly useful. And I think that my query might be relevant also to the previous inquiry. I would like to put pieces together. First of all, it's nice that I'm able to sit through a talk and I'm able to be comforted and also instructed. I tend to be very antagonistic to myself and to everyone around me, but now I'm starting to develop an actual sincere desire for Krishna and develop a little bit of humility. I can see that Krishna is starting to speak a little bit of my language, and so I'm able to hear how Krishna is trying to directly help me and to help other people and whatnot. Thank you for that. And I think that in seeing that, I can see that maybe Krishna is also trying to reach out to people who are completely devoid of any kind of spiritual awareness. And he's maybe trying to learn their language and also bringing them to some sort of shelter, whether it be bhakti or not, but any kind of mercy. I find your talk today and the talks in previous days incredibly encouraging. Even doesn't matter what you're doing, Krishna is always watching. So we're always offering. We're always offering our thoughts, whether we believe it or not.
Thank you. Thank you. Very interesting point. Thank you. Anything else?
What is the mission?
He was just sharing his realizations.
What is the role of fire sacrifice in bhakti yoga? Fire sacrifice.
Okay. What is the role of fire sacrifices in bhakti yoga? So, again, I'm not an authority in Pancharatri ki vidhi, but all I can say is that of Pancharatri ki vidhi entails that offerings to Lord Krishna be made in the sacrificial fire. Okay. And the whole process of bhakti, the underlying principle is to surrender everything, is to utilize everything, dovetail everything in the service of the Lord. So externally, we do it, when we do any yajna or offering, we offer everything through the medium of the fire. And internally, we offer ourselves, our lives, our free will in the service of the Lord, in the fire of separation from the Lord. So there are these two aspects of fire, which is what I have understood then. So fire is outside and fire has to be developed inside also, our heart. So chanting is like the fire. Service to Guru is like the fire. That's why we say samsara davagna. That is the fire of devotional service, where everything is, which will help us cross the ocean of birth and death. So there is an external aspect of fire in bhakti, which is the pancharatrika aspect, and then there is the bhagavad dharma aspect of fire, which is the fire of devotion, which will burn away all our anarthas. So this is what I understand. I don't know, someone else can add. So. Yes,
what are the practical applications of your class today? You said Radha Kunda is the best of all the places of Mathura and Vrindavan, and Govardhan Hill and Radha Kunda. So another practical application of that is, in our temple here, we have a very nice pond. We can call it Radha Kunda and make it more Radha Kunda type. Do you have any ideas as to how we can make it more Radha Kunda type?
I'll probably be guided by all the senior authorities in the temple on that. But I think Radha Kund, we can, so Prabhupada said this is Vaikuntha, so Prabhupada has already said that, you know, this is Vaikuntha, so we don't need to make it any more of a spiritual place than what it already is. But I mean, with my limited understanding, as long as we respect that pond and keep it clean and use that and keep the pond in such a way that it is pleasing to the deities, because everything here, every single stone here is meant for the pleasure of the deities. So as long as we keep the deities happy by maintaining that pond, then I think that will become Radha Kund. Radha Kund is a place where ultimately Lord Krishna and Radharani feel like entering. So if it is clean, they will enter. So in that sense.
But simple thing, we just put a board there, Radha Kund, keep
clean. Maybe we can suggest that to Anirudh Prabhu, and if the authorities are happy, then fine. May it happen that way.
So, Philip Prabhu is listening online, so he asked a question. How to transfer Swanston Street or car parks into Holigram while distributing books?
So again, I'll go back to the same verse. I'm not qualified to answer these questions, frankly. These are all beyond my limited realizations. So I'm struggling with my own conditioning, but I will just, whatever I speak, it is just because I have heard from senior devotees, so I will just repeat that. Again, the Bhagavatam verse, Bhavad Vida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swantasthena Gadabrata. So, if we carry Lord Krishna inside our heart, and whether it is Swanson Street or Burke Street or Collins Street, it doesn't matter. As long as our intent is to serve the Lord, if we go with that purity, then we can transform the whole world, regardless of which street we may go to or whatever we may do. Otherwise, we may be distributing books in Mayapur Dham itself to the Mayapur Vasis, and nothing will happen because our intent is not to please the Lord. So it is the intent, it is purity is the force, which Prabhupada said. So as long as we keep ourselves pure in our intent to serve Krishna, then that is the force that will enable us to get outcomes in our service, which is favorable to Krishna. At the end of the day, everything has to be anukul to the Lord.
My question regarding Kalindi River. You mentioned when Krishna wanted to descend, you are in Govardhan and Kalindi come. But it appears that even in the time of Guru Maharaj, also Kalindi was present. So, I mean, Govardhan and Kalindi is present throughout creation, or they come appear and they disappear?
I cannot answer that question chronologically unless someone else can knows the answer to that question. I don't know the answer chronologically, except that Krishna's Leela is Nitya Leela. That is the only common answer that I can think of. If anyone knows this answer, please guide me also.
I just know that Dham is eternal. It doesn't get annihilated when the cosmic everything. So it's always present. So I know that Dham is always existing.
Okay. So your question was specifically around Krishna's descent happens in Dwapar Yuga. Right?
Yeah.
And therefore, but this was pastime was happening much before that. So when Krishna descended, then Yamuna Nadi must have manifested in that yuga. So how was it present in an earlier yuga? That is your question, right?
And
so
Krishna said, yeah. I already intend to go before we descend.
Right, right.
So it looks like it wasn't there before, and then now it
came.
I heard in one of the lectures that the Bhagavatam is not there, whatever Surya was is not in a sequence. It's a collection of all the what has happened in the last past and different yugas and then put in a collection. So this might have happened after in one previous yuga Lord has come, performed his pastimes and left.
Mm-hmm.
And then the yuga has come, the yuga come where Yuga Maharaj pastimes
so left. That's a common understanding. But maybe we can check with others also. Other, you have views on this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. No more questions? Then we'll end the class here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. Jai Nityananda Bodh Premanand ki.